So I think I'm supposed to start right this second. So hi, I'm Leonard. I'm going to talk about multi-profile UKIs and other ways to supercharge your unified kernel images. I only got 20 minutes, like everyone else here. I have some slides here. I try to keep myself short, but it's not a disaster if we don't go through all of them. I really like questions, so don't hesitate to ask them. I mean, don't ask them if I have to answer in a novel, but yeah, please interrupt me. So UKIs, what's that again? UKIs is an acronym short for Unified Kernel Images. I hope that most of you, given that you came to this dev room, already know what that is roughly. But if you don't remember, it's a single UEFI PE binary consisting of the systemd stub, EFI stub, a kernel image, a traditional one, and an inner ID. A kernel command line, a device tree if you need that, a boot splash if you want that, and maybe a couple of other things. But the gist is all that together in one PE binary, that's a unified kernel binary. We've wrote a spec about that. In particular, Luca did that, I guess, so that it kind of formalized a little bit all of this and how the sections, like the PE sections, PE binary sections, are supposed to be called. What's the benefit of having UKIs? Of course, robustness. There's only going to be, like, if you boot, the firmware only needs, ultimately, in the best case, only read a single file of the ESP and can boot it. So that's very easy. You can update it very easily, right? Like, because you can put the file in place under a temporary name and then sync everything to disk and then rename it and sync it again. And that's a very simple, robust way how you can update your kernels, which is quite beneficial. So yeah, it's also secure in the sense that, yeah, if it's one file, you can sign it as a whole, you can measure it as a whole, it can be authenticated by regular firmware, UEFI firmware authentication, like Secure Boot stuff and maybe even Shim if you have them in between. So this all is great. I think I did a talk about this last year or something, so I kind of hope that everybody knew everything I had on my slides here before already. So what I'm going to talk today about is about the issues with that design, right? Like, I mean, it's a fantastic design. It gives you all the reproducibility, all the robustness, all the security and things like that. But it comes at certain drawbacks. It's not trivially locally modifiable. It's a strictly uniform image. Like whenever you deploy this, it's going to be the same thing everywhere. And because of all the security properties of the measurements and of all the, and particularly the authentication via Secure Boot, local modifications are not possible. That's great for many use cases, but it's terrible for many others. In particular, like people on, like hackers in particular, are kind of more used to changing things locally. So, we try to figure out. So, yeah, on one hand, we have this beautiful uniform thing, but on the other hand, people want to make modifications. How do we kind of make that possible? We came up with a couple of solutions. Like, the first one is EFI add-ons, like Luca added that mostly. The EFI add-ons are basically these little PE files that look like executables, but actually do not contain any code. They are just envelopes with all the other stuff that I had on the earlier slides. Like, for example, an extra init ID, an extra kernel command line. It's mostly about the kernel command lines, but it can also carry the other stuff. CPU microcode or whatever else. They are authenticated because they are PE binaries. They are authenticated like any PE binary via Secure Boot, via Shim. So this is solution number one to this problem. There's another solution that we came up with. It's called systemd credentials. They are not authenticated by Secure Boot and Shim, but by TPM, and it's for parameterization of systems and services, right? Like, this is inherently a systemd concept where you basically have these little bits of data that have a name and that can, like, you lock to the local TPM, and that can, like, they are encrypted and authenticated by the TPM, and then they are unlocked the moment the service that consumes them is going to start. This is great for stuff you need later at boot, right? Like, because you actually need a systemd instance running, and the authentication and decryption happens at the moment this is used, right? Like, or the service that actually wants to consume them is used. So, which is different from the EFI add-on stuff, which is authenticated during early boot when it's first loaded. And then solution number three is also a system thing is systemd config and systemd sysext images, which are like authenticated like kernel keyring, and they are basically little disk images that you can overlay over Etsy and user, and where you can not just have little bits of information, but you can actually add like a bunch of files atomically to the Etsy and user tree. So I'm not going to talk much about this here, because this is not the talk supposed to be about that. It's about the other stuff. So this is all great. Conceptually, all of these are sidecars, if you so will, right? Like you have your UKI that's nicely uniform in a single file, and then you drop next to it in a subdirectory that is named exactly like the UKI, just with a .d at the end, these sidecars. And then the SD stub thing that is glued in front of the UKI goes and looks next to itself, basically, for these files, loads them into memory. If it's the EFI add-on, it will authenticate them by a regular secure boot. The other stuff it puts up in a redeemed parser to the kernel. So they extend UKI in a pretty flexible fashion. Like a secure boot shim kind of means that everything is bound to your distribution keys, though, and system credentials are kind of authenticated by inherently local stuff, and the confed sysx stuff by whatever's in the kernel keyring. So these are different. Owners of the authentication mechanisms, but yeah, still it's pretty flexible. There's stuff inherently local. There's stuff vendor bound. Yeah. My talk today. So far, any questions? So now we're going to start with the actually interesting stuff. No questions. Okay. So multi-profile UKIs is something I recently added to systemd. I mean, I think a year ago, something I started working on this, which is the forced solution to this, and it's new. The idea is basically is that we can have a little bit of variability in what you actually boot there, but you still do it within that single UKI. So you do not have sidecars for the first time, but you actually do it within the UKI. So you basically have multiple profiles. A profile in the sense basically is that you have alternative sections, right? Like previously, traditional UKIs, you have one of each. Right, like you have one inner ID, one kernel command line, one device tree, and so on. With multi-profile UKIs, we basically allow you to have many of these, right? And then you glue them together in a profile, or in another profile, or in a third profile. So, yeah, not a sidecar, but all inside of that UKI. It's still authenticated as one, it's copied in as one, it's just one file. It provides a much more limited flexibility, right? Like because the person who, or the vendor who puts together UKI needs to think about all the options beforehand, and then define a few blessed configurations, basically, that are a combination of kernel, init RD, kernel command line, and so on. I think most of the time, profiles are probably going to be used for the kernel command line, right? Like so that they all share the same kernel, same init RD, same everything else, but then have a separate kernel command line that is a little bit different from the others. But yeah, primary use case is that you have one UKI that with a couple of different kernel command lines, one for regular boots, one for recovery mode, one for factory reset, one for storage target mode, and these kind of things, right? Like so where you basically boot the OS mostly the same way, except that you actually boot it to a different target that has a different purpose. Could be also installer stuff, whatever else, like what people come up with, how they want to use is up to them. Of course, these are just the obvious ideas that came to my mind. Systemd boot, you know, systemd stub is that EFI stub that I talked about. Systemd boot is the boot menu thingy that runs before it, if you want this. It has been updated to understand these profiles, right? Like, so if you... like traditionally, if you drop a UKI in that one directory, systemd boot will find it and put it in the boot menu. You can choose from the menu and boot it. Systemd boot has now been updated to understand the profile. So you drop in that one file, it has five profiles or something like this, and sdboot will understand and create five menu entries from that, right? One for each of the profiles. These profiles come with a little bit of metadata so that you can actually put a nice string on the menu item that is called actually recovery mode instead of profile number three. Which profile you actually choose to boot is measured to a TPM PCR so that we have all the security properties, right? This is this slide might be a little bit confusing. It's SD stub, not SD boot that actually does the measurement of the profile, right? So you can actually use profiles even without a systemd boot if you do direct firmware to UKI boot and shouldn't be encoded in the command line load options that you can configure in UEFI. Because this is just one UKI, you get the regular authentication by Secureboot and Shim, stuff like that. You get the measurements of the PCR, like in PCR4, and things like that. The measurements that SD stub does will only cover the profile they actually choose, though, right? So this is important, so that only the stuff actually consumed is the stuff that actually shows up in the measurement logs, and you can very clearly distinguish which of the profiles was actually chosen. This kind of stuff matters because you, like, for example, for storage target mode, right? Like this mode where basically, like, macOS had that for a long time, where you can boot into a mode where your hard disk is exposed as iSCSI in that case, but like system natively supports it via NVMe because it's very easy to do that with the kernel. But in that case, you don't want that full disk encryption works, right? Like, you want to expose a disk as a disk, not as a decrypted disk, right? So it's important that for different profiles, you can have different security policy objects that you can bind to, so that you can say, yeah, if I boot in storage target mode, make it impossible to unlock the disk, but if you boot in regular mode, make it possible. Systemd measure, like, that's this little tool that can pre-calculate the measurements that booting a UKI will result in, natively supports that. UKeyFi, like, that's our tool, Python tool, a part of Systemd that helps you with building UKIs, has been updated to support these multiple profile UKIs. And I already mentioned that profiles carry this extensible descriptive metadata. It's used for menu item strings, but we can later use it for other stuff as well. Like, for example, there are some ideas about adding a little bit of matching to that too. So you can suppress a couple of menu items if they don't apply to the local system or something like that. So much about multi-profile UKIs. Anyone has a question about this part? You have.
About profile, is it a section in the executable, or is it a combination of sections?
So the question was regarding what a profile is. Is it a section itself in the executable, or a combination of sections? So it's a dot, like, there is a section type called dot profile, and it carries the metadata. But it just combines a couple of other sections that are exactly like the previous, always was. So basically, if you have three profiles that all want to use the same kernel, the kernel is only there once. Yeah. So it's about, like, you only have additional copies of the stuff that you actually want to change in each profile. There is another question. So the question was, like, how do you actually pick the profile from systemd boot and the firmware? Like, from systemd boot, I already mentioned this, right? Like, you just have five menu items, and you pick the one that you want, because, yeah, one UKI will create five menu items. This is then propagated to the UKI via the load options thing, right? So basically the command line, if you so will. But it's actually a little bit tricky, right? Like, because we don't necessarily want, like, we don't want to measure it together with the command line, so we actually chop it off before the measurement and things like that. Anyway, it's probably the details are a little bit too complicated to discuss here. But long story short, if you want to select it if you do not use SD boot but want to boot directly from firmware into a UKI, you also put it in the load options, right? But it doesn't look like a kernel command like a command line switch on purpose, right? Like, use an at, like, with the at symbol, so that I make very clear that this is not considered a regular command line option, right? Like, it's a psychological thing. Anyway, no more questions about, there's another one.
So the device tree matching based on the skid stub, that is independent of this part, right?
So the question was regarding whether device tree matching is independent of this. Well, obviously, you know this. it's entirely independent, right? Like, this is mostly about selecting, the focus is on giving the user a choice of different profiles. It's not so much about making automatic choices. We have some other stuff in store for that. So my next slide is actually about this. Other ways to supercharge UKIs. This is something that we recently added as well, is an automatic choice of device trees, right? Like, because on ARM devices, you usually want to support more than one ARM device, and they all need, like, slightly different device trees. So somebody whose name I forgot added this logic to SD stub to actually do allow you to have multiple device tree blobs in the same UKI, and then at boot, we calculate a hash from DMI data. It's like the Microsoft hardware ID stuff, CHID, is used for this, and that picks the right one for the local system, so that you can basically have one unified UKI that carries 77 device trees, if you so will, and the right one for your local system is actually used. These sections are called differently than they were traditionally. These ones called DTB auto instead of DTB. I forgot DTB, right? To indicate that there's only one of them chosen and it's automatic. There's a second section type called HWIDs. That's the part that actually contains the tables, like based on which hardware IDs pick which device tree. It's basically really stupid mapping from the Microsoft GID. I don't know how I'm pronouncing it. GID, CHID, like from the Microsoft CHID to the device tree compatible string. This is automatically selected by boot, by systemd stub. It's not a user selection in this case. This guy, Anhi, who just asked this question, then it's adding something right now, like he got the most, like the key parts merged, but it's not complete yet, of bringing your own firmware. This is for like confidential computing stuff. They kind of want this, that the firmware, like that the UKI can have control about the firmware that's actually used. So the idea is basically that you're leveraging the same logic as the device tree selection. You can embed a firmware, UFI firmware in your UKI. You drop that on your confidential computing VM. When it boots up, it checks is the firmware that's actually running on the same one as the one that it carries. If so, it's just continued booting normally like it always did. If not, it will issue those UFI calls to update the firmware, will reboot, will come back, and then it will have the right firmware, right? So this basically the idea is that if this is in place, you can have your UKI for some confidential computing VM, and you afterwards have the guarantee and the TPM measurements, and so prove this to you that you're running only the software that you wanted to run on it, including the firmware, right? So it's kind of nice that we can reuse the same thing that device tree people did for embedded devices for bring your own firmware. Yeah. This is basically, there's a new section called .efi FW, which carries the firmware, and then we use the .hwids that we already have for the device tree stuff to do the mapping again. And is automatically chosen so that you can actually have one UKI that works on the confidential computing environments, both of AWS and of Microsoft or something like this. Yeah. What's also interesting about this is that you can nowadays directly boot into UKI on a QEMU command line so that you can actually test this really nicely, because then you basically have one UKI. You specify that in the QEMU command line, confidential computing, but it boots up and everything. There's no other complexity involved anymore. And you get the perfect guarantee that, yeah, everything inside of the VM you can trust. There's another talk by Anhi click on that. I mean, I'm not sure how you're going to do this, but yeah, click on that for that talk. When is it?
Tomorrow,
someday. Anyway, I only got like how much time left?
2 minutes
left. I have some more slides, but they don't matter. I would prefer if we still use the last 2 minutes for questions. I have a question.
Yeah, have you experimented with this as a callback payload by any chance? Have you experimented with this as a callback payload by any chance?
A cool bit?
A callback.
If I have experience with this as a callback, no, I have no experience with callback. You know, I'm this guy who runs his PC. I only do UFI. I'm very boring.
Because this would be useful as an alternative to, say, heads or Linux boots.
I'm pretty sure. But I have no idea. So, I mean, the key here is really, you know, with this stuff, you don't really need, like, you have basically one file that can, like, in particular the bring your own firmware that boots, like, the whole shit through, right? And that's kind of nice. I think we have time for one more question. No one has a question? Was I so clear?
1 minute left.
Come on. Nobody has a question? Nothing. Did nobody understand what I was saying or what? I'm a little bit disappointed in you. Okay, then I guess thank you very much for your time. I have some other talks. There's one about that where we will talk about some more stuff. So anyway, look it up in the schedule. Thank you very much.